Talking Hockey in the Afternoon, the Big Show with Rob Kerr and Pat Steinberg is only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Anytime you get hurt, it's tough. I mean, I think the most important thing is just that you stay positive. Like, the toughest part is just being away from the team, I think. You know, you play this game to play the games, not to practice and stuff. So I think that was the toughest thing for me, is just kind of being away from the guys, having to come in early and get treatment. But, you know, it's hockey, and then these things happen. You just got to stay positive.
That's David Jones, who gets back into the lineup tonight for the Calgary Flames. Played all of 48 games last year with Calgary in his first season with the Flames. This year he's played one. This is his second game, so his 50th as a member of the Calgary Flames, as October quickly turning into November. Safe to say it has not been the start, I guess, isn't even the right word. It just hasn't worked here health-wise for David Jones yet. Now Calgary facing arguably their biggest injury so far in the season, as Mason Raymond is now week-to-week on injured reserve with a shoulder injury. Got hit by Brooks Orpik late in the third period on Saturday in that 3-1 loss to Washington. Pat, I don't think anybody's suggesting that David Jones slides in to replace Mason Raymond. Different type of player, brings something different. But early on in this season, losing a guy like Mason Raymond, who's one of the leading goal scorers for this team, had a hat trick in one game anyway, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow.
The loss of Mason Raymond is a tough one. He brings a lot of speed, a lot of jump to the lineup, and, yep, and when he's going, he absolutely helps this team in a positive way. He leads the team with 5 goals, and I know that 3 of those came in one game, but still, he's been
he's got that ability.
Yeah. He's been one of their better offensive players to start the year. And knowing that this team has had so much problem generating offense from their forwards, losing Mason Raymond's a big blow. They don't have a ton of offensive depth on. They've got a lot of bodies and a lot of guys who are kind of close to one another, but they don't have a lot of scoring depth on this group. So you take away a Mason Raymond, that's going to hurt this team. And David Jones coming back in, it's nice for Jones. It's good that he's finally able to play again. Missed 8 games with a lower body injury, but I don't know if David Jones coming back into the lineup with or without Mason Raymond being healthy is really a boost at all. It's not. I don't think he hurts you, but I don't really know if David Jones is a guy who helps you a ton at this point. You know, I don't think him coming back in is like, okay, well, now the Flames can be a little bit better. I guess what it does is maybe give you a little bit more balance among your lines if everybody's healthy and Jones comes back. But it's nice for him that he's coming back after missing 8 games. I just don't know what it does for the team.
What he brings you are the ifs. You know,
that's a good way of putting it.
If he can, you know, he's had his moments. I mean, as I mentioned, he's played 49 games for the Calgary Flames. Pat, I would say he's probably had 10 really good games. You know, a couple at the beginning of last year. There were some before he got hurt towards the end of last year. But it's, you know, he's like most guys in the National Hockey League. What separates them from being great, or what's a good hockey player to a great, it's consistency. Mm-hmm. And if he can find his scoring touch, he'll be a big bonus. If he can play a big game, he'll help you out. If he can rise up and play on a top, all of these are ifs. I like David Jones. I think he's a really nice guy. I think his heart's in the right place. I think you're hard-pressed to find a guy more frustrated in that locker room right now than David Jones. I think David Jones really believes he's a 20-goal scorer. We've had this conversation before. Are you a 20-goal scorer,
or did you score
20 goals, right? And I think David Jones really sees himself as a 20-goal scorer, but he hasn't done that. He's just not here in Calgary. And it's, you know, as he comes back in, Mason Raymond, I thought, was beginning to, boy, I really like that line on Saturday, Washington, Johnny Gaudreau and Backlund and Mason Raymond. I thought there was some chemistry. Okay, injuries happen. We've seen that movie a lot here recently. But what it also does is also kind of puts off having to make a roster move. And I wonder if it's if all things being equal, if Mason Raymond's healthy, how difficult that next move was going to be.
We've talked about it for a couple
right?
of days now, yeah. right? I mean, was it going to be Juris? Was it going to be Gaudreau? And when we didn't see Setoguchi go on waivers yesterday, we thought, oh, geez, well, you know, maybe it's Mason Raymond, and that's the way they'd go. But we didn't know at the time yesterday. He was day-to-day with an upper body injury. Now he's week-to-week with a shoulder injury. So either the injury progressed or the Flames just released more information. I think the injury progressed. I think he saw somebody yesterday, which is why the news got updated today. So that's what happened on the Raymond front. Had Raymond been healthy and they didn't have the option of putting him on IR, then that would have been a very interesting decision as to how you get Jones back in the lineup. Because I think you can make the argument that Juris and Gaudreau do as much for you or more right now than Jones could. And it's tough because we haven't seen Jones play. But it's about the ifs, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
It's too much about the ifs.
Yeah.
And Gaudreau and Juris have spent more time on this roster. But you don't go down that road. An injury is how Jones is going to get back into the lineup. And then we'll have this conversation again whenever Mason Raymond's ready to come.
Well, I am looking forward to 5 o'clock because we're going to talk to Ryan Huske, Inside Hockey, and our first chance to talk to the head coach of the Adirondack Flames since their season started. And it has not started well for the young Flames. They're 2-5-1 on the year. They got Michael Ferland and Marcus Granlund going. They have Max Reinhardt and Sven Berchi absolutely stuck in the mud right now. Nobody's given up more goals in the American Hockey League than the Adirondack Flames. Very curious to see how things are shaking out down there. It seems to me that it depends on where the injury happens or the position happens, but it seems to me that it's Ferland and Granlund on the clock right now here. That if something happens and another body needs to come up, it's going to be one of those guys.
Yeah, that would be the two that Granlund is probably the guy that I would bring up first just because he seems like he's the most NHL ready. Not to say Ferland doesn't seem like he's close or doesn't seem like he could help. I just think Granlund comes in and fits in seamlessly.
Yeah.
I think that you can put him in any spot you want and you're able to use him in your top nine forwards, and I think he can help you. So to me, it would be Granlund. He's the guy I'm looking for. He's the guy I'm waiting for. And I'm curious as to what road they go down once Raymond gets healthy, because they might not have – they might have another injury between now and then. They might not. You never know. But if there is that next man up, to me, it would be Granlund.
This is a sour, dour thing to say. But week to week leads me to believe that we're going to have a roster issue to deal with before, and I'm talking about us here to talk about, to debate and everything. The Flames will have to deal with, obviously. But week to week leads me to believe there'll be something, just what we've seen recently.
It's the way of the NHL.
It really is.
And it's why whenever you say, but the Flames aren't healthy, to me it's not an excuse. And any issue that the Flames have had through 10 games, you say, well, they haven't had a full roster. Nobody's had a full roster. The NHL doesn't ever have full rosters. Every team is always missing somebody from their ideal lineup, and the Flames are no different. And so
this Canadiens team is arguably the healthiest team that the Flames might have seen.
And Washington was pretty healthy on Saturday,
right?
But as the year goes along,
no Yemelin tonight for Montreal, right? He's been knocked out. I mean, he's out of the lineup. But that's, you're absolutely 100% right. Everybody's waiting for somebody to come back. Ask Carolina, ask Tampa Bay, right? As a result of Mason Raymond coming out, one of the lines intrigues me a lot. And that is Johnny Gaudreau, Michael Backlund, and Paul Byron. That flies in the face of general convention, doesn't it? That you would take two smallish forwards and place them with Michael Backlund's NHL size, but he's not John Scott. He's not a monster. Does this line have an opportunity to stay together, or is it the deck already stacked against it because of the two wingers? The size of the two wingers. The height of the two wingers, I guess.
They've played together at times before this season, so I don't know. I mean, it's
well, we saw similar, didn't we, in the preseason? Didn't we see Joe Colburn?
Yes, with Byron. Remember the Timbits in the tower?
Whatever
Bob Hartley decided to call it.
Right.
Is it destined to fail? No, I don't think so, because I think that you can do that. But I guess for me, I just don't really think that there's going to be any lines that stay the same throughout the year. It might be a few games that we see lines remain together, but it just doesn't seem like there's anything that's going to sit there. And I thought Monahan, Hudler, and Colburn really struggled against Washington a lot on Saturday. So it's tough for me to say that, okay, there's going to be a couple of lines that you just keep going back to if you're Bob Hartley.
But he is going. But it's funny you say that. He is going back to that line. And here was an opportunity with Mason Raymond to come out to do the old bingo ball thing. But I'll say this. There's no reason for us to slow down this show and talk about the play of Hudler, Monahan, and Colburn on Saturday, because I think we're both on the same page. But I think there's enough body of history there that you have to give it a little bit of time. And the other one, the fourth line's not going to really change. Who's on the right side might change.
Yeah.
So really you have those two lines, and
you know, we keep talking about this. Well, what's the number one line? What's the number two line? What's the number three? They don't have it. They have probably, in the grand scheme of things, in comparison to Los Angeles or Chicago, they probably have 3A and 3B, right? And I think you're absolutely right. You know, game, maybe two games, maybe three games, that's probably the length of time. And I don't think that's ideal. You really want to build that chemistry.
Which is why I think we're seeing so many changes and why we've seen, you know, from game to game so many changes. Because I think Bob Hartley and that coaching staff are trying to find something they can fall back on and have a little bit more consistently. But I just look at this group. Everything's so interchangeable. Like, there's not one forward that stands out above the rest. There's not one guy that's so much better, or a couple guys that, okay, these guys need to be first-line guys. Hudler can play with Monahan and Colburn, or he can play with Goudreau and Backlund. You can put any of those kind of top nine forwards. You can put them anywhere. Even Boma enters into that conversation. Juris has entered into that conversation. You put Jones into that mix.
Yep.
Other than, really, Bolig and McGrattan, everybody else you can kind of plug in anywhere when it comes to your forwards.
Well, let's not necessarily, you know, put Mr. Bolig into any kind
of...
He was on the power play unit this morning. Yeah. I don't think it's out of the realm. When we saw it with Tim Jackman last year, that every once in a while they'll elevate. And interesting stories coming up. I don't want to say they've come out because it makes it sound like it's breaking news, but they were, you know, chronicled in the newspapers this week about Brandon Bolig and his conversations with Bob Hartley. I want to do more. What can I do? Bob Hartley with a lot of praise for him. I suppose it's a strength, but maybe that's the weakness of where you're at right now, is that you do have a number of guys that can play up and down
You're hoping that one day Monahan is a whole lot better than and Goudreau and then Bennett.
Absolutely.
And then just the way certain guys develop, they kind of determine where they slot going forward. But where certain guys are in their development right now and where other guys are as veterans is just a whole grouping that are so close together that it's tough to really differentiate who's better, who's a first-liner, who's a second-liner, who's a third-liner right now.
Doubtful that you'll be able to get tickets for this one tonight because the Montreal Canadiens are always a big draw. But if you are in need of tickets, always keep in mind the Sport Check Zone tickets. They're available at Calgary Sport Check stores for only $30. Now, fan club members can win a pair of tickets to see the Flames from Sport Check Zone. Visit sportsnet.ca/960 to enter. This has not been an easy building for the Montreal Canadiens. Neither is McMahon Stadium, for that matter. The Montreal Canadiens coming in here having lost 7 in a row against the Flames. They lost 3-0 up at Edmonton. We'll turn our attention to the Habs when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
If it's on the 200 by 85, it's right here first. Calgary's home for the National Hockey League. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. On the NHL beat, it's The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, aside from having more people in the dressing room during a regular season game than in Anaheim in the playoffs, no, I think you can definitely feel in the city that people are into hockey, they know about it, and I think we have a really positive crowd here in Calgary, which makes it fun, and I've been really enjoying it so far.
That's Jonas Hiller. He'll get the start tonight in goal for Calgary. 10 games in, plus a preseason. What do you think of playing in Calgary as opposed to playing in Anaheim? And, I mean, the line, and we all knew it was coming, more people, you know, for this morning skate today because Montreal's here than would be in Anaheim for a playoff game. I mean, it's got to be a different experience. And I would think for some, Pat, a rewarding experience. These games against Original Six teams, these games against Montreal are always different here as well because there are a lot of people who, as you know, who outdate the expansion era, grew up, you know, either Canadian or Maple Leaf fans or, you know, Original Six fans. And that, you know, the fact that it's a transient city, always for a Tuesday night, this one's just going to have a different feeling to it than most games would.
Yeah,
than the Carolina game.
Than the Carolina game. I don't think you're going out that much on a limb in saying that. I think that a game between the Flames and the Chicago Blackhawks might have a better feeling than the Carolina
Absolutely.
Game. But no, you're right. The the buzz in the building when the Habs are in town is something unlike, I think, any other night of the year. The Maple Leafs bring a great buzz. The Canucks always bring lots of faithful. The Oilers games are always fun. But knowing that Montreal comes here once a year, knowing that Habs fans are a different breed of fan, they just are. It's more than just living, breathing, and sleeping Montreal. It's like you live the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, it's the epitome of when you say that line about it's religion.
It really is.
It is in Montreal. It absolutely is.
And that carries on to their fans all across the country. And so when you come here, you get that feeling. And you know, they'll be here early. The chanting will begin early. And it's going to be loud. If the Habs get out to an early lead, it's going to be a buzzing building. And what I like about this is that it always raises the game of the other side. So when the Habs fans are kind of taking over, it's when Flames fans, and you know, we talk about this building sometimes being a little quieter than other buildings. Well, not on nights like this, because Flames fans get a whole lot louder when Habs fans are doing their thing. So if you have not been to a Montreal-Calgary game and you're going tonight, I think you're going to be in for a real fun treat. These are a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are, and the Montreal Canadiens are not struggling right now. I mean, they lost last night, but they're 7-2 to start the season. That was just their second loss in regulation. This is a team that's leading the Eastern Conference, made it to the Eastern Conference final last year. You know, you and I talked yesterday. I don't think there's any problem suggesting that this is going to be a playoff team. Where they fit in the East, that remains to be seen. But Montreal's a team that doesn't wow you, I guess. I don't know what the right way is to explain it. Of their seven wins, six have been by one goal. They don't run away with anybody. You know, their two losses have been rather dramatic. 3-0 last night, but it took a thumping in Tampa Bay. But hard again to look at this team and go, well, I don't like their goaltending. Well, yeah, you have to. Carey Price is there. Dustin Tokarski's a young, good young goaltender. Their backhand, well, P.K. Subban's won a Norris Trophy. Markov's, playing like he always does. He seems to be a little bit of an ageless wonder. I like, when they're healthy. Alexei Yamalin, again, Jared Tenorti's, and I think we're going to see Tenorti tonight. Good young defenseman up front. Lots of, no superstars. There's no Sidney Crosbys in this group. But not unlike the Calgary Flames, if one line's not going, maybe another line's going to get you.
And I think there's a little bit more higher end with Montreal.
Pacioretty's
not a superstar, but he's a really good player. Plekanec's a really good player. And Galchenyuk is really coming into his own as a former third overall pick. I love Brendan Gallagher, and watching him play is really a treat.
Yep.
And he's enjoying to watch. They've got a very deep, if not overly spectacular, group of forwards.
Right.
But a nice blue line. Andrei Markov's had a really nice start to the season. A lot of people raving about the work that he's done.
Yeah.
We know what P.K. Subban's all about. So I like this Montreal team. I think Carey Price has been very good the last little bit, but his overall year, I think he even has a couple more levels that he'll get to this year. So Montreal has been, they've been kind of playing it a little bit too close. It's the only thing I'll say. Their wins have all kind of been of the 1- and 2-goal variety. There's been a lot of games where they've gotten timely goals. And so eventually I think you'll start to see that going the other way. So do I think they're going to be a team that is kind of playing at this clip all year long? No. But do I think they're a playoff team? Absolutely. I think they're one of the three best teams in the Atlantic Division, and they'll finish 1, 2, or 3, I believe, in that division when it's all said and done.
Just looking at their numbers, they haven't played 10 games, so you got to be a little bit careful about the trends you look at. But 19th in goals for, 17th in goals against. My guess is that the goals against will probably lower. They'll with Carey Price, they'll probably shave almost a half a goal off of that by the end of the season,
I would think.
Yep. Not unlike the Calgary Flames and the tendency to give up shots, but they do create some shots too. They'll exchange chances with you. And I think that's one area that I look, with Calgary again, analytics, call it whatever you want, just not dangerous. I mean, they're 28th right now in the National Hockey League, averaging just under 25 shots a game. They've got to get more pucks on net. Montreal gets pucks on net.
although they're kind of just middle of the pack when it comes to where they are in terms of shots generated and offensive chances and how much
right
they have the puck.
Right now or traditionally?
Right now, they're just kind of middle of the pack, and which is why I think that maybe a 7-1, 7-2 start not totally representative of the team they are. I think they're a good team.
Yep.
Do I think they're a team that's going to be winning 7 of 8 and 8 of 10 for most of the season? No, I don't. I think they're a little bit closer to the rest of the Eastern Conference, but I still think they're a playoff team. And I don't think it was a fluke they got to the Eastern Conference final last year. I think they're one of the better Eastern Conference teams.
I do too. Just to your point about what the numbers tell you, they're 7-2, yet their goals for they average 2.56 and their goals against is 2.78. So, take it for what it's worth. To your point about no, it was not a fluke, and I made this case to you last spring, and I'll continue to make this case. If you hold up the Boston Bruins as the top team in the Eastern Conference right now, my suggestion is the Montreal Canadiens, for whatever reason, however it is, and I know you've got a very special guest coming on at 10 after 6, and maybe you'll ask him this. Mm-hmm. Marc Bergevin, the general manager, I think has done a nice job of building a team that competes against the Bruins. They really do. And we watched the Bruins, particularly last year, roll over very good clubs in the East, yet Montreal was always a tough out. Montreal was always a tough game for them. And I don't think it's any small feat when you come back to win Game 6 in Montreal and then go into Boston and win Game 7 the way they did. I truly believe this Montreal Canadiens team is built to beat the Boston Bruins.
Well, I wonder if – I am curious because you say that. The Boston Bruins are kind of the one team in the Eastern Conference, and maybe not this year, no Chara.
Yeah, and early though,
but
right?
But the last few years, they've been the one Eastern Conference team that you would say – yeah, they kind of play a Western Conference brand. They're built like a Western Conference team. So I wonder what Montreal would do against some of the
an
good
LA
Western
Kings or Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, the St. Louis Blues, the type of teams that we hold up as the would Montreal be able to be competitive against?
I think the part about the building of it might have less to do with things such as size or speed or the physical skills, and it might have more to do with just the mental makeup. I mean, Carey Price is as cool as a cucumber, right? I mean, you have to be to play that position in that city, and everybody around the Canadiens will tell you he's the leader of that team. He's not wearing a C, but he's a leader of that team. There is an element of cockiness in PK Subban that is, rubs some people the wrong way, but I think the comments he made coming out of Montreal last year after Game 6 about going into Boston and going to enjoy winning there and listening to their crowd, that type of thing, I think that's infectious in that room. So I think part of it is the mental makeup. So do I think they would be intimidated playing the LA Kings? No, I don't. I don't think that they would, at times I thought that, the Rangers might have looked a little intimidated during the Stanley Cup final. I don't think you get that out of Montreal. Now, that's not to say they have the horses for that course.
Right.
I think they're very quick. They're very good in transition. I think they have the capability of being a very good power play. I'm not sure the power play is where it needs to be right now. But, Pat, I would suggest it's as much mental with the Montreal Canadiens and the way they carry themselves. So, yeah, I think they would be competitive in the West.
And I'm curious as to, they lose in Edmonton last night, and was not a game they're very happy about. And
no.
PK Subban was not happy about what happened. And yet, they probably come away playing a better overall game than maybe the score suggests.
Yeah.
Ben Scrivens was very good for him. And
but a couple of teams that have gone up, that's happened to in the last week.
Yeah, that's true. And, Scrivens and the Oilers are playing much better hockey right now.
Yeah.
I just look at the Habs, and I wonder about how they would do against the Western Conference and some of these teams. And, you don't really – this trip sees them go to Vancouver on Thursday, so maybe that's a little bit of a better indicator as to what they do. Not to disparage the Oilers or the Flames, but I don't think a lot of people look at the Oilers and Flames and say, okay, there's a team that's a really bona fide playoff team. Vancouver's a little bit closer to that in the Western Conference. How Montreal does on Thursday against the Canucks will be interesting too.
Yeah, these Western swings are always a big deal for the Canadiens. Part of the reason what we talked about is that, it's a big deal when they come to town. There's not too many quiet nights that the Montreal Canadiens just creep in and play a game. And I talk about this all the time. you know, playing the Phoenix Coyotes or the Arizona Coyotes in the second half of back-to-backs is a terrible setup for Calgary. Just a terrible setup. Because normally they're in a building like San Jose or the Staples Center or someplace like that where the crowd's good. Big crowd. Right. You know, they're into it. And the next day you go into to Glendale and that crowd just sucks the life out of you. I don't think that happens for the Montreal Canadiens, especially when they come out west. They're partisan crowds. They're up. They're jacked up crowds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're certainly going to get that in Vancouver. They got that last night in Edmonton. You know, that's part of, you know, if I'm the Calgary Flames, I'm kind of looking at that game tape going, well, you know, it's they played good. Like, they played well enough to be in that hockey game. Yeah, Vancouver is absolutely a different level. It's an interesting question. I never thought about it that way. Would you put them in the West? How would they do? You're right about Boston. I think Boston.
Maybe Boston wouldn't do well in the West either. I just, especially last year with Iginla and Krejci and Lucic and Chara and Seidenberg on the back end. You throw in the skill with Bergeron, who would be an elite player on any team he played for. Marchand's kind of that chippy guy that gets in your face. They're deep. They've got a good goaltender in Tuukka Rask. Yeah, I think they could compete in the West.
Yeah,
the
I think they could. But I think Montreal, you know, all of the players we've talked about, we haven't talked about Brandon Prost, the former two-time Flame.
Don't want to talk about it.
Dale Weiss
still hurts.
You know, you got Travis Moen. You've got some guys that can be gritty on your fourth line. You know, Yamelin when he's in the lineup, very physical defenseman. PK Subban can. I just don't see them being run out of a building. Mm-hmm. Do you?
No, and the fact they were able to beat Boston the way they did, go in and take two in Boston to finish off a series like they did, to me, that's a pretty good indicator that if we think Boston can hang in the Western Conference, well, Montreal's done a really good job of playing the Boston Bruins, even if they haven't beat them in every playoff series the last number of years. That's a really good matchup for Montreal. Yeah. And so I think they could have some pretty good matchups in the Western Conference as well. I don't think they're as good as Chicago or St. Louis or L.A. or Anaheim or anything like that.
No.
But I'd be interested to see how those matchups would go and how a seven-game series specifically would go between a Western Conference, a better Western Conference team, and the Habs.
Are they the best? Are they this country's best chance for a Stanley Cup?
Right now they are,
I think so.
Because it's not Vancouver playing in the West. It's not Calgary and Edmonton. It's not Winnipeg. In the East, it's not Ottawa and it's not Toronto. And Montreal's the only team. Montreal went to an Eastern Conference final on merit last year. They've got an elite goaltender. They're the one team. I don't think it's going to happen, but they're the team that is closest to back to a cup final.
As you know, I'm not a huge fan of that. You know, who's Canada's team or when's the next? You know, these things will happen. I think there's pressures. I think there's pressures that are applied to Canadian teams that we played the Jonas Hiller clip that the American teams just generally don't get. Although, you know, Montreal, if they aren't the team that's scrutinized the most, I guess they're only slightly second to Toronto. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're scrutinized in two different languages. You know, maybe that's the difference here. I think they do a marvelous job, at least this incarnation of the Montreal Canadiens, do a marvelous job of not getting caught up in all of that. It just doesn't seem to be the same day-to-day drama that we see in Toronto.
Which is weird because the Habs are covered on almost a tabloid level Montreal.
It's
different than anything you see in the West. Even in Vancouver where we talk about the controversies and the goaltending. Yeah. Like Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, like it's nothing compared to the type of scrutiny that you get in Montreal. Lou was talking on Hockey Central at noon about, you know, you pick up a paper in November or February, right in the dog days of the season, and it's 13, 14 pages with five and six different columnists on the Habs, and nothing else. And you're right. I mean, they've done a pretty good job of being able to block out a lot of that stuff in that Montreal locker room. And yeah, I think about it, and you know, they've been to the Eastern Conference Final twice in the last, what, four seasons? They got there in 2009, 2010. And
with Halak, and then with
Carey Price, they get there in 2013-14. Yeah. So, yeah, that's two trips in, what, four seasons or five seasons. And correct me if I'm wrong, they're the last Canadian team.
93.
Well, they are the last Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup, but has there been another Canadian team other than the Habs in the last, since Ottawa went to the Cup final, has there been another team to even get as far as the Eastern Conference final
Vancouver.
Than Montreal? Oh, Vancouver.
Lost in the Stanley Cup final.
That's a good point. I'm just going to turn my mic off.
No, it's not.
I totally forgot about Vancouver.
No, when you're tap dancing on, you know, off the top of your head, these things happen all the time. But, no, I mean, to that point, though, Vancouver even hasn't been back.
But Vancouver hasn't been back since 2011.
No,
so
no,
it's been...
Montreal's hovering around. Yeah. I think it's a no-brainer. I think they are the best chance this season. But I think a lot would have to happen.
And over the next few years, they look like they're the team that'll be closest. Like, does Ottawa seem like a team that's ready to jump back up
into
the upper echelon?
I'll tell you this. According to the Golf Pro out at Speargrass, the team north of us is just on the verge of winning it this year.
Yeah, so the Montreal Canadiens for the next few years are the closest team to the, to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, you could be absolutely right. Rogers Hometown Hockey is coming to Red Deer on Saturday and Sunday. We will be at the Centrium. Along with a whole host of all kind different things. The Flames are going to be there. Alumni is going to be there. I think the Oilers are going to be there. Speaking of the Montreal Canadiens, that will be the game of the evening as Calgary takes on the Montreal Canadiens. This is two of the next three for the Flames are against this hockey club, so we'll get to know them really well. If you want more information, go to hometownhockey.com for all the details. A lot to deal with around the National Hockey League, and a lot of it has to do with discipline, the good, the bad, the yin, the yang, and a little bit of history was made yesterday. We'll get into that next. Live from the Hot Stove Lounge, it is game day, the Calgary Flames and the Montreal Canadiens. Warm-up goes at 6 o'clock, and please note, a very special guest in the Hot Stove Lounge, the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens at about 10 after 6, yep. Mark Bergevin in studio. Very excited about that. And then the puck drops just a little after 7 o'clock. All coming up here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Home for Boomer and Warner in the morning. Jim Rome, Hockey Central, The Big Show, and tons of play-by-play. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking Calgary Flames hockey in the afternoon. The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We're expecting a pretty hungry team. They lost last night, and they're tops in the league. So they're fast. They're a good transition team. We didn't have a great game last game either, so it's going to be a great test for us to try and bounce back. We got to get some wins here on home ice.
That's Mark Giordano talking about the importance of tonight's game, and it's true. The Calgary Flames 1-2-1 on home ice so far. The Dome, they've been much better away. Only have one more game on this homestand before they're back on the road.
For five,
as they take on the Nashville Predators here at the Dome on Friday. Just a correction earlier, I was talking about Alexei Yemelin. He is not injured. He was injured earlier in the season and missed two games, but he has been fine. Took a little bit of a hit last night, but sorry if I misspoke on that. He should be ready to go. I don't see that being an issue tonight. There are a couple of guys that won't be ready to go for a while. Due to some injuries we saw last night, particularly a nasty hit, John Moore on Eric Haula of the Minnesota Wild. The latest on that, and there is just latest, reporting from Rennie Lavoie of TVA, John Moore hearing will be at 1 o'clock tomorrow Eastern time. Opted to do it on the phone, even if the league requested an in-person hearing. The league requesting an in-person hearing, when they do that, they have the liberty of applying six or more games to the suspension. Yeah. The reason I find this interesting is we used to see a lot of these. We have not seen a lot of these. As a matter of fact, John Scott yesterday was the first player suspended this year. It's the latest the league has had to hand out discipline in terms of missing games, forcing a player to miss games, since 1983-84. Now we have a run of it. I don't know if that's fair, but now we're going to see at least one more coming up. Kreider also was involved in a nasty hit yesterday, but the National Hockey League saying the five-minute major and the game misconduct was enough, so we don't anticipate any kind of discipline there. And I think I heard you guys talking about it earlier, but I'll bring it up. Do we read anything into the lack of suspension so far this year? Is the game changing? Have the players learned? Is the league becoming more lenient? what, if anything, is the fact that we almost went an entire month without seeing an NHL suspension to start an NHL season tell us?
I think it's just more evidence that, you know, the things that the NHL are trying to get out of the game are slowly coming out of the game because players are adjusting. I don't think that that's all it is. I think it's probably a little bit of fluke, too, that we haven't seen a suspension this early. I think there's probably a little bit of that going on. But I do, and I think that you've seen it. How long has it been now that we've been talking about, you know, targeted head hits to the head and blindside hits? It's been, what, three seasons now?
No, it's been longer than that, because I would suggest to you,
I believe Rule 48 was the 2011-2012 season, and that's when Shanahan first started cracking down on it.
Yeah, but, I mean, I go back to Chris Drury when he was in Buffalo getting decked in a game against Ottawa that Ray Emery ended up getting in a fight in. And then that was the time that the NHL put in the five-minute major for interference, if you remember, that was supposed to deal with those types of hits. So now we're talking 6 years ago,
but in
and it
terms
kind of started it. Well, no, and it's kind of been, you know, high-sticking and hitting from behind. Then hitting from behind became the, you know, the kind of the cause. And then the targeted head shots, absolutely. And I'm saying that Drury hit in Buffalo against Ottawa, that was kind of what got us going down this path. I mean, how long since Savard was hit by Cook?
A long time. I believe that would have been the 08-09 season that happened, but there was not a crackdown. The crackdown
no,
didn't
but it started,
start.
It started the conversation.
The conversation,
right?
Sure.
Right?
But
and
the
then,
real crackdown and it being a story and us being like, geez, look at all these suspensions. I believe it started the 2011-2012 season in the preseason that year when Shanahan started doing those videos. And that's when we really started to be talking about these targeted hits to the head. And they introduced Rule 48 and the blind side, and they amended that to any targeted hit to the head. So it's only been, I think this is the third year, maybe the fourth year now, that we're talking about these being something that truly are trying to get knocked out.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you interpret the videos, because to me, I think there was an earnest conversation about it. I think, you know, like I said, you know, they adjusted the rule. They made the five-minute major for interference. You know, to your point, though, I think in terms of the conversation was beginning to be had in more circles. I think the debate, the fact that you had Brendan Shanahan coming out and saying, here's the video, here's what we didn't like, and here's what he got, that itself had an effect on all of this. But I would suggest we've been going about this for a while now.
For me, the true crackdown when the NHL started to consistently punish it was there.
Yeah.
That's more what I'm going down. When the suspension started coming into play.
But it also became really easy to do that, right? Because you had these videos. You had the kind of the paper trail, as it were. Not to suggest you couldn't do the work before. But anyway, immaterial. It's been going on for a while. Because there were other crackdowns prior to that, right? There was the interference crackdown. And maybe part of that is, you know, part of that is that there isn't really a... Do you get the sense that this year there was something that, in particular, the National Hockey League went out and said, okay, we're working on this. We're going to get this out of the game. You know, we've heard that in the past, right? To your point, you know, we're going to get the headshots out. So this year we're going to do videos and we're going to let everybody know and all of that. There wasn't kind of the league coming out at the beginning of the year going, okay, watch this. They adjusted some rules. I'm not saying they didn't do that. They changed some things on the ice. They moved the hash marks apart. You know, they've adopted the hybrid icing and all of those things. I don't think it's a lack of a crackdown, because I also don't think we're sitting here going, geez, I can't believe they didn't suspend that. Have we had that conversation this year? Have we come away from a night of hockey going, did you see that hit? Why hasn't the league? Man, I'm up in arms. I don't think we've had any of that either. I don't think they've missed much.
No, I don't think so either. And that's why it goes back to me believing that the players have really started to adjust. And I go back to that. I remember sitting in this very room with a much different looking table, but in this very room with Bryn, and we were talking about just that. We were talking about, well, is this ever going to be adopted? And I said, look, this is the greatest league in the world. Mm-hmm. He's the greatest players on the planet. Mm-hmm. They'll adjust to whatever the NHL tells them to. It'll take a little bit of time, but even that first year when Shanahan's suspensions first started coming out and the arguments about you're wussifying the game or it's not enough or whatever, the players started to adjust. So you could have 700 players hating the fact that those targeted head hits are now being penalized supplementally as much as they are. They'll still adjust and not do it. They don't want to be suspended. They don't want to hurt their team. They don't want to hurt their pocketbook.
Yeah.
And I think you can see going back to that season, and certainly now, I think every night there is an example of more than one example of a player who could target a guy, who could follow through with a hit that could be devastating, that could potentially target the head, and they don't do it, and they let off. And I think that is not saying that wouldn't have been the case before, but I think it's happening more now, and it's that quick thinking. They know, hey, that's not allowed, I'm not going to do it, and they're becoming rare. And the fact is, John Moore's hit on Eric Halla, which absolutely was against the rules last night, it's the first time we've had an incident like this, and we're almost at the end of the month.
Yeah. You said something, though, earlier, and I do want to revisit it. Possibly it's just coincidence. You know, it has to be
coincidence because we're so late, right?
The one thing that we don't, because I want to, you know, I'd love to rush out and apply some other things to it. Right now you're dealing with two guys, John Scott, who got the two games, and, you know, the head hit yesterday by John Moore. Those aren't the same player. Because a lot was made about 2 weeks ago about, you know, the John Scott type of players is, you know, quickly kind of getting out of this game. There's just a bunch of guys who, you know, in the past were nuclear deterrents, whatever you want to call them. That I think if you look and you look back at supplementary discipline over the last couple of years, I don't think that it was all fighters, whatever you want to call them, heavyweights or anything like that. I think there's probably fewer of those guys have been involved in those types of suspensions. The other thing is age, because I wonder how much of this, Pat, is, you know, how much of this is on the backs of the development of the hockey player. How much of this is coming from, you know, the coaching they're getting in junior, the coaching they're getting in minor hockey, because, you know, the Ontario Hockey League put in very stringent rules about hits to the head. You know, there has not the peewee body checking, because that just happened. So that's only a couple years ago. I'm thinking about things that happened. Now we're talking about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago that impacted the development of hockey. I'm wondering if we're seeing any of that coming up, because I don't think there's enough of a sample size to say, geez, it's only guys who've been in the league for 5 or 6 years, or, you know, nobody who just got in the league in the last 2 years. I don't think we can make that case either.
That doesn't give enough credit to just how smart the players are, period. As a whole, the NHLPA, or the group of players, they're the best players on the planet. And if you were to tell them that all of a sudden slap shots aren't available, it would take them a little while, but eventually they would adjust and the game would go back to, I don't think it would really take away from how many goals were being scored, because eventually they're too good to not adjust to what the NHL
is
ruling
but,
on.
But understand, though.
And I do, don't get me wrong, I think that the developmental stuff plays a part of it.
Because the developmental stuff takes out is that second guessing.
Yeah.
Right? If you said, you know, if you said right now in the National Hockey League you couldn't take a slap shot, you'd have 750 guys second guessing. But in 5 years from now, if you took it out of development, when the next crop comes up, they're not second-guessing because that's how they've been developed, right? That's my point. But again, I don't think we have a cross-section of ages that leads it. You know, there's nothing here that indicates, geez, it's only this type of player that's committing this foul. We'll see. You know, if it remains this way at the end of the year, it'll be a very interesting conversation to have. You know, if it is down exponentially, where are we going with this game? You do overtime. Are you getting a hue and cry about the lack of physicality in the NHL?
No, I'm definitely not. And that's the thing. And this is, maybe some people look at it differently, but the way I look at it, watching hockey right now has not changed one bit from before they instituted Rule 48. I don't think it's less physical. I don't think it's less exciting. I don't think it's less impactful. Like, it's still an extremely high-impact sport. And look, we saw Mark Giordano nail... What game was that?
It was Tampa Bay.
It was Tampa Bay when he nailed Kucherov in the middle of the ice. And it was a clean hit. It was a good hit. And it was... He didn't think twice about it because he knew he could deliver a clean hit in that spot. I don't think the game has gotten any less physical. I don't think it's... it's become any more soft because of this. I just think they're making it safer, and guys are still playing physical, but they're playing smarter while they're playing physical.
Ask Mason Raymond how soft it's getting. Ask Josh Juris. I mean, that game, we talked about that yesterday.
Agreed.
For two teams that
absolutely
hardly
agreed.
Ever see each other, there was something about that game. And what? There was nothing that should have been sent to the league or the league should have reviewed. It wasn't that, but it was a very, you know, it had a little edge to it. It had a physicality to it. It had a little bad blood, and that remains in the game. I'm prepared to take a little more time and just wait and see how this plays itself out before I declare a monumental shift. But I think it's an absolutely valid question to ask right now. If this is, behavioral change.
Take this out of it. Do you think there's been a shift, period? Take the bigger picture into account. Because I absolutely do think since the 2011-2012 season, there has been a shift in the National Hockey League. A shift away from those type of hits. But I don't believe it has impacted the enjoyment or the physicality of the game. But I do think there has been a shift. They're happening less, you're seeing players avoid them, and you're seeing less suspensions because of them.
I think so, but I'm also consciously aware of this league's... See, in many ways, don't you think we, the collective we, the royal we, the media has become kind of the watcher, the keeper of the gate, that it's back to what I said before. How many arguments have we had about these things because they weren't suspended, right? How many times have we come on and gone, boy, did you watch that game last night? Dude got leveled by the other dude, haven't heard a word out of the National Hockey League. It does not matter. As soon as one of these things happens, look, it happens in our shop, right? As soon as some dirty hit happens in a game, we get an email saying questionable hit in the Nashville-Chicago game or whatever. The media is on top of it. I think you're right, Pat. I do. I'd like to see what happens when you get into that witching hour of, playoff runs and things like that. We still saw suspensions during the playoffs last year, right?
Yeah.
The guy that's up in front of the jury right now was suspended last year during the postseason, was he not? Wasn't John Moore suspended?
Yeah.
Right? John Moore was suspended for a hit during the postseason. So... I don't want to throw it back and go, see, he didn't learn, so nobody learned.
Well, but nobody's
but
saying they're
back
never
your,
going
no,
to
no,
be
no,
a part
no,
of it,
but
though.
Your question was, have we seen a behavioral shift, right, since 2011?
The fact that Rafi Torres is now considered a dirty hockey player, the fact that Rafi Torres is considered in some circles a liability on the team, I think that's perfect example of a shift. Because before this
but
time...
But Matt Cook isn't.
Well,
but Matt Cook isn't. Remember, Matt Cook's repentant. Matt Cook went to Minnesota, and Matt Cook was misunderstood. And Matt Cook, he's kept his nose clean and everything. And Rafi Torres was on that same bus in San Jose. They took a $500,000 hit to protect him.
Right.
Right?
It's a matter of opinion on Matt Cook, because I've never been like, oh, yeah, he's a dick. Look, Matt Cook is who he is on the ice. I think we know that. Rafi Torres is who he is on the ice. I think we know that at this point.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it's just the overall line of thinking. I think the media, I think fans, I think the NHL, I think teams, and I think players have all had a shift in the way things work.
Yes.
When looking at the bigger picture.
And maybe what I have a hard time, Pat, is applying a date to it. Because I see it as a constant evolution. So when you say 2011, now I got to think, okay, what happened in 2011?
I guess I use that one because that's the first time Brendan Shanahan was on board doing the videos, and it became as much of kind of a flashpoint.
Right.
We were talking about from the preseason when they were handing out big suspensions throughout that entire year. It was a flashpoint type year for
right.
that type of stuff. That's why that year.
Whereas, the old guy in the room.
Coley.
The old guy in the room goes, yeah, but you know what? I want to be really careful on this, because when they came out of the lockout in 05-06, the Calgary Flames had 478 power play opportunities. Last year, they had 249. You know what I mean? That we saw crackdowns. We've seen crackdowns in the past, and then we've seen going away from it.
That's almost an inapplicable stat. Like, it doesn't mean that
The stat isn't implicable. What I'm saying is that I've seen this league go through ebbs and flows. I've seen this league go through crackdowns. So for me to make a definitive assessment that, yes, it has, you're right. I mean,
I'm arguing definitely from a perception standpoint. I perceive the game to I perceive more players not following through on hits like that. It's you could never have empirical data on it because how do you, ooh, could be a head hit, didn't go through. Like, you don't have data on that. I just
well,
perceive,
the data you would have would be the misconducts or
but I don't even think that's accurate data because they're cracking down on it more than they ever have before. They're looking for it more. Whereas before it was man's game and Scott Stevens was a feared presence on the ice because he delivered those type of hits,
okay.
Right?
If that's what you're talking about, absolutely. 100%. But I keep going back to where I got hung up in this conversation was 2011 and I'm going in 2011. Well, I don't know how much has changed. But if you're talking about Scott Stevens to now, if you're talking about Eric Lynch, again, all those hits that we cheered about Eric Lynch, those were headshots. Mm-hmm. Look, Don Cherry, nobody wants to hear this, but for 20-plus years, Don Cherry used to put out a DVD VHS tape on concussions and headshots. That's what Rock'em Sock'em was. And I had half of them, right? To that point, you're 100%. Absolutely. We've come a million miles. A million miles. And now I'm just curious
but
about.
But even you can. Matt Cook wasn't suspended for his hit on Mark Savard.
That's right.
The only price he had to pay was a weak fight the next time they played
right.
the Boston Bruins.
But then there was more attention on Matt Cook. That was that crackdown
yes.
that came after that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. But that's a more recent example. We all thought it was a dirty hit, but the NHL did nothing about it. Now we're at a point where they're cracking down on it. They're looking at it. There's a rule in place. There wasn't a rule in place when Matt
no,
Cook
there
hit
was,
his guy.
There was a rule in place, but they didn't call it. That's the thing, Pat.
Rule 48 was not in place
right.
when Matt
and
Cook
that's,
hit
to
his
me,
guy.
That to me is a different conversation because you had rules in place. You didn't use them. And now you had to put subsections into these rules.
Well, but the rule you're talking about, the 5-minute interference.
No, I'm not talking about that. There's, where is the rule book here? The rule book, I mean.
I know what you're saying.
My point is 30 years ago, the rule book was 16 pages, right? Now this rule book is whatever, it's 200 pages.
Yeah.
And there's a high stick, an interference call. There used to be interference. Now there's different subsections of interference. You know what I'm saying?
That's where your
head hit comes from. Absolutely.
I guess what I'm saying is there was never a specific penalty for that before.
Right.
Now there is a specific penalty.
Right.
There are videos and videos and videos of, okay, this is what is allowed. This is what is not allowed. It has been refined so much that it's easier for an official to call it on the
what
ice.
What is the end point here? Okay, so what are we arguing about? What's the
I don't even know if we're even arguing. We're conversing.
No, I think it comes back to this whole idea. Well, the original point was we've seen one suspension officially. We got another guy waiting. Mm. That's the longest we've seen since, 83, 84. So have we seen a behavioral shift? Absolutely, we have. It just depends on the timing of it. Have we seen a behavioral shift in the last 2 years? I don't know about that. Have we seen a behavioral shift in the last 5? Absolutely. Last 10? Absolutely. Last 20? Absolutely. And it's a moot point because there is one coming, or we're in the middle of one, or whatever. This game is not going to be the same next year as it was 2 years ago. It continues to evolve.
Yeah.
It continues to evolve.
I would absolutely agree with that. And if that's all that we're hung up on is when it started, then
I think that's all we're hung up on.
Then it's probably
I
not.
I think that's...
Because we're both on board in saying that right now it is something that is evolving.
Just
and we
put
are
a
seeing.
Headset on and turn it on. You've got nothing but time.
It's not necessarily
relevant.
Related to the conversation.
Damn it. Okay. Well, maybe we missed something. All right.
Derek Wills thinks that hockey is a dirty sport
there
and
you
wants
go.
No part of it.
Yeah.
That's what he's
Can't
just passed
it.
Over to me.
Yeah, unbelievable. I wish he would have just come in and
he's
said
leaving
that himself.
10 games into his first year.
4:25 this afternoon, Michael Grange from Sportsnet will come on. Steve Nash, chronic nerve and back problems, will not play this year. Looks like Canada's greatest basketball player is done. We'll talk to him about that. Also, the NBA season getting ready to kick off. Elliot Friedman will join us. We'll talk to him about what we were just talking about, kind of the lack of suspensions as well. Edmonton's revitalization. They've come a long way in a week. Ryan Huskins Huska, the head coach of the Adirondack Flames, joins us at 5 o'clock for Inside Hockey. Derek Wills, apparently his last function is before he quits the game at 5:25.
It's too dirty.
And we'll hear from the captain, Mark Giordano. That's all coming up. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talk to your boss. It's totally okay to stream Sportsnet 960 all day and night on your work computer. In fact, it's new company policy. Sportsnet.ca/960.